Hi there, and welcome to Empowerment Hour with myself, Denise Oliver, and my guest is here now, Ben Calder. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. Yay. Here we go again.
It's almost like a summer's day out there today. How are you finding
so
it?
So warm in comparison to like last week. It's ridiculous.
Well, even to the very beginning of the week, it's so warm. It's quite unpredictable, really, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's life, though, isn't it? Get ready for the change.
Yeah, done that one. So let's just do a recap of we were introducing everyone, including myself, to your past and where you come from. So just give us a roundup of all of what we talked about last week.
The dark and checkered past of Ben Calder. Dun, dun, dun.
I think one of the things I'm just going to say that I mentioned to Tracy Jones that you'd been a surfer dude and you'd had long curly hair. She laughed.
Yeah, well, you know, that's part of growing up, isn't it? We all got to go through those stages.
We all got to try it, haven't we?
Yeah. But yeah, we went through the dim and distant past of my birth in Kent and my growing up in Cornwall and university in Cheltenham to train as a primary school teacher who realised I was about as unsuitable to be a primary school teacher as one of the children would have been at that point. And my outdoor activity career down in Weymouth after a brief stint of working for New Look, but all the kind of climbing and outdoor
New Look
stuff
as well.
We did
I'd forgotten New Look.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, good old New Look Distribution Centre, yes. DC4. Shout out to you guys down there. So it was an interesting life, and then moving to Shrewsbury and working for the care homes with the children with extreme behaviour, and then working with the autistic and Down syndrome children with extreme behaviour, and then discovering kinesiology and starting to train, and I think that's kind of where we got to, wasn't it? The beginning of the professional career.
Yeah. So just let's just go to the kinesiology and your first experience of it. Just tell us what that was like for you.
I mean, there was kind of two parts to that. The first was the lecture that I saw given by Sue Lilly, who she and I still have a connection and still do bits of work with each other, and listening to her lecture on hacking the body's computer.
Yeah.
And just this miracle idea that actually as a system, the body can be not only opened up and looked at from a different perspective, but it can be changed. And this very deterministic idea of health that we're given by a lot of conventional medicine is not true. You know, we are very adaptable, very changeable, and that kinesiology as a tool can be used to find out not only what to change, but how to change it, and more importantly, how to change it. And so after listening to her lecture, I went up to her and said, I've got these problems going on in my life right now. Do you think this thing that you do will help? And she said, sit down and let's find out. And that was it, really. I came and then found a kinesiologist in Shrewsbury, Frankie Cossey, who was a very strange Canadian lady, ex-accountant, that just used to wiggle my arm around and mumble and tell me to do things or not to do things. And I just thought she was crackers, really. But it was whatever she was doing with me changed things. And not being satisfied with the explanations I was getting, it was time to get my nose in and go and find out. So then I went and started training with the then head of health kinesiology in UK, Anne Parker, and just had an aptitude for this technique, this muscle testing, this muscle monitoring that just then forever from that point just changed my life for sure.
So can you give us an example of what came up for you during your sessions before you trained in kinesiology and what you had to do to change them? Was it just that the therapist helped the change, or did you have to go away and change things?
There was definitely both sides of that. And initially when I went to for kinesiology, I had at the time quite noticeable and quite bad psoriasis, and I had really bad allergic rhinitis. So it's kind of like hay fever, but all year round. So I used to go through tissues like nobody's business, and, you know, I was forever snorting and sniffing, and, you know, I didn't sound very healthy, but it was always there. And the first thing that Frankie did with me was allergy testing and identifying identified that, amongst a few other things, that I had a cane sugar allergy. And she said to me, wow. So, yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's in everything.
yeah, as I found out. Yeah. And she said to me, you know, do you have much of a sweet tooth? And I said, I don't really think so. I mean, I maybe have like a couple of cakes in a day or one or two chocolate bars a day, but I wouldn't have said I've got a sweet tooth. And she said, well, what are you like if you don't have that? I said, oh, yeah, I get really moody and, you know, I can get a bit kind of like aggressive and a bit agitated. And she was like, oh, okay, fair enough. So I then went on, and bearing in mind this was, what, the beginning of November, and I went on a 12-week, she put me on a 12-week no refined sugar diet. So, you know, just think about it. This time of year, I was 4 weeks into it. I knew that I had to go through Christmas with no refined sugar. And at the end of the month, I was honestly at a point where I thought I was going to murder people. I was like, surely this can't be the sugar.
There's a lot of people that can identify with that. Also, sure. When was this, Ben? Because the sort of no sugar style diet is like it's a revolution at the moment.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's like it's a whole new thing. But actually, when were you doing
that?
Well,
this was 1999, so it was 17 years ago now, so it's quite a while back. And it was crackers, and there was so little information, and the whole kind of holistic health scene and the natural health shops were all at such a much more basic level, and so much more scarce than they are now, and you know, the whole nature of online. I mean, I barely had a mobile phone at that point, you know. We didn't really have the internet, so actually it was a very, very difficult thing.
And even books wise there wouldn't have been the recipe books to actually help you, and to actually access things like perhaps stevia or something like that, which now trips off the tongue of a lot of the people I know.
Sure.
Just, you wouldn't, I doubt you'd have been able to get hold of it then.
No, I mean, I was lucky enough that at the time I managed to get hold of an Ayurvedic cookbook.
Cool.
And it's quite a famous classic Ayurvedic cookbook. And, you know, had some help working out what my typology was. And I basically started using an Ayurvedic diet. And that just improved things for me. I mean, in comparison to where I was as well, it was a big change. And it was difficult. And I was working in a situation then where I had to eat food that was prepared for me by a kitchen. And so to say to them, well, I can't have those things anymore. You know, I can't. Going to do me jacket potato, great, but I can't have the beans, and you know, because it was amazing. You know, I can't have bread because it's got sugar in it,
and no tomato ketchup, all those sorts of things that we just take for granted.
It was incredible as a revelation, but it made such a difference. And 12 weeks later, and I continued to go back to Frankie about every 4 weeks in that, and I was having bits of psychological work done, I was having bits of allergy work done, I was having bits of metabolic work done on my system, all done through health kinesiology, and I was just changing. You know, my psoriasis cleared up, and no longer needed any medicated support. My allergic rhinitis improved so much that I no longer needed any kind of medicated support, and I was feeling, you know, really good, and it started to kind of inspire me that actually I wasn't happy in my work, I wasn't happy in the situations I was in, but I could change. You know, if I can take sugar out of my diet and survive, then, you know, anything else is possible.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. So you go off to do your training. How long was it, your training?
So the initial training was about 15 months that gave me my kind of health kinesiology practitioner's diploma. And I used to go away for residential 4-day blocks, and kind of pretty much work solidly from 9 until 6 every day on various aspects of the kinesiology training. And they were really interesting times. There was a group of about 20 of us that went through with my cohort. I was one of only 3 men to start and one of only 2 to finish. You know, so it was a very interesting space. Lots of really interesting people from different backgrounds. And just, it was the first time I really started to be aware of all these different layers that a problem, that the same problem could represent in. and just that you might see an aspect of something in a physical level, which could be a metabolic thing, or it could be a structural thing, it could be an organ thing, or it could appear in a subtle space, as I would term it now, which is emotional or mental or subtle energy. So this is chakras and meridians. And it could be into a more spiritual dimension. There could be kind of past life aspects. You know, there wasn't anything that by health kinesiology at some point it didn't go, yeah, there's a way we can look at that.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a lot of respect for Ann Parker, my teacher, who was a very solid and very clear kind of character on how we were going to do stuff. And I had a lot of appreciation for Dr. Jimmy Scott, who founded health kinesiology, for just thinking the way he did. And you know, when I met him and got to know him a bit later on down my career, it was very clear that he kind of wasn't he was a bit of an odd character, and there was a good reason why he could think about these things in ways that other people couldn't, because for him that was kind of normal.
Yeah, he was sort of wired differently.
Definitely. Yeah.
As these people often are.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that had both its pros and its cons.
Yes.
As it always does. And, you know, again, one of the things I'm grateful for him is helping me recognize how detrimental and how pathological shadow can be if you don't recognize it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a lot of really good stuff in there, and I found that, because at the time I was working with autistic children with extreme behavior, so I spent a lot of time with kids that were very unsettled, and I was very aware that there was a lot of stuff that I could have done to help them, but the particular organization that I was working with weren't interested in looking at that side of things. And by my third level of training, I was starting to become really sensitive to people. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that I think for about a month really, really kind of bummed me out is that anytime I was in the street, it looked to me like I could see people dying.
And
literally,
yeah,
you could see how the cost of their actions was killing them.
Yeah.
And that was, you know,
I've had similar experiences to that. And I think that's led me to where I am as well.
Sure.
It's like you just look at people and think, oh,
yeah, sure.
It's just, oof, what, it's like, no, I can't possibly know that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I did.
But just, you know, those are expensive choices these people are making. And with the job, it started to just get ridiculously, I was ridiculously sensitive to the energies of the children and found it exhausting. So I quit. And I didn't know how the hell I was going to get through to the end of my training. So I happened to see a local paper advert, because we were still doing paper adverts at that point, for...
those were the days.
Yeah, sure. For a natural skincare company who were based just over the border near Ellesmere. And I used to go at weekends to sell natural hand creams and skin creams and body creams at craft fairs and country fairs and shows and things. And I did that right up until the point where I could start earning money.
Yeah.
And it was enough to kind of cover my rent and cover my dues. And, you know, to be fair, I got into quite a bit of debt at that point as well, because I didn't want to do a Joe job anymore. I didn't want to go down the Wayne's World front and end up with an extensive collection of hair nets and name tags. So I just chose not to work and chose instead to put myself into some debt with the belief and the confidence that once I'd qualified that I would earn that back and clear that, and I did. And you know, I'm actually very proud of myself for how far I allowed myself to get into a difficult situation, knowing what could happen if I didn't sort it, and then sorting it.
Yeah,
you know, it was a very kind of empowering
thing to
do.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
yeah. We're not talking a few quid here.
I've heard that so often from people who totally follow their path.
Yeah.
Just knowing that they have this knowing. No one can tell them this. They just know that it's right and that they're okay, and it's all going to sort itself.
Yeah.
And you're so similar to so many of the stories I've read and I've heard.
Sure. Yeah. Although I didn't know it was going to be all right. I just thought, well, I don't want to do anything else. I don't want to go any other way. And especially in the early years and occasionally, I've literally shook my fists at the sky and gone, look, if you want me to do this, just send me clients. Otherwise, send me stack of shelves. Do whatever. But, you know, just if this is what I'm meant to do, let me do it.
Yeah, you so know? You asked.
Yeah, sure.
And you received what was right for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do that a lot, you know. It's kind of like, this is what you need me to do, then let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, I want to go this way, let's do it.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I think more than anything, that fortifies my will, you know, because I can be a very knife-edge type character that if there's a choice between two things, then one of them will hold me, you know, the clarity of it will be there. And that's the one we're doing. I don't care. This is what I want to go for. And sometimes that's to my detriment. I can get to a direction and suddenly I'll hit a blank wall or a dead end and I'll go, I really don't know what to do now. And I just have to sit there and you know, it's almost brought me to tears at points. I got this far on that thing and I now don't know what to do. And then I reorientate myself and I go, because I couldn't see that before.
Yeah.
And then I change it and I move and I find a new direction, or I find a new part to the direction, and off we go again.
Yeah, I have similar experiences to that, and I've been brought to tears in the past. Now I just put the telly on and watch something funny and do my knitting.
Brilliant.
So I do something that is productive for me and calms me, and I just wait. Because sometimes you just have to wait. You have to have a little bit of patience.
Absolutely.
We were just having a chat about some of the remarkable things that can occur when somebody experiences kinesiology. And you were just saying about a lady you met when she was 82.
Yep.
You pick up the story about this lady, because that's quite fascinating.
So, and again, you know, I see every age bracket of clients. There isn't, you know, and literally from pre-birth, so, you know, babies when they're still in utero, all the way up to kind of right at the end there. And when this particular lady came to see me, she had migraines since she was 16. So she was 82 when I met her, migraines since she was 16. And she was on a lot of medication that, A, wasn't solving the migraines. B, was causing a bunch of secondary problems for her. She was greyer than the soundproofing here in the studio. You know,
That's grey.
She didn't look at all well. And we did about 6 weeks of work. And within that 6 weeks, the migraines stopped. And in the next kind of 7 or 8 years that I knew her on and off to catch up with, they never came back. She came off all her medication and she started to look like a healthy, you know, pink, normal color again.
Mm.
And was one of these really exciting characters that just would tell everybody about what I did. You know, she was such a benefit to me and my career as well. But, you know, just exciting to have been with somebody who has had such a problem for so long.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a ridiculous.
So how often was she having migraines? Can you remember?
She was having 4 or 5 times a week.
A week.
So
that's, you know, not living, is it?
No, at sure. All. Yeah. And you could see just by the way she held herself that, you know, life has been difficult.
Yeah.
You know, she really struggled. And, you know, and in all fairness and in all honesty, and I tell every single one of my clients on their first session, I have no idea whether or not we can make any difference. How quickly, how much, how easily, because I don't, you know, because it's their body and the kinesiology is informing us as to what needs to be changed in there. And, you know, and I joke with every new client, if they needed to do headstands in a bucket of manure for 2 weeks to solve the problem, it's what they need to do. And I expect them to do it and I don't expect them to see any benefit until they've done it. So get used to it. But because they choose what happens, their body is selecting. No one's ever done the bucket of manure.
No.
Because why would you choose a bucket of manure as your remedy?
Yeah.
You know, there are ways around it. So it's such a creative way of finding out what works for you as an individual and how you get there.
I think what fascinates me about kinesiology in particular is that it's not about what's going on that the person's actually thinking about.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make any logical sense.
Yeah.
You have to experience it. It's one of those to truly feel what the changes can be for your body. And even, I mean, I've had a lot of kinesiology over my time as well. And just that, the fact that my, whether it's the leg with you or the arm, when I've been to see Peter Pendlebury, that there's nothing I can do to stop that arm from doing what it does.
Sure.
If it's a no, it's a no. If it's a yes, it's a yes. Yeah. You know, it's whatever my body is requesting at that time.
Yeah.
And I could go thinking from my brain that it's one thing, but actually the body goes, no, I've got to sort this out first.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's fascinating.
It's great. But that's also because we spend so much of our time thinking in logical sequence.
Yes.
You know, we've been taught to be very left brain, very logical. So everything is linear sequence.
Yeah.
So we think A, B, C, D, E. Now, the body doesn't work like that. The body is gestalt in its nature in that A to Z to G to F, and that's only in a flat line. And if we put that into five-dimensional space, so we're looking at directions, you know, up and down, plus time,
yeah.
You know, the body's doing all of that simultaneously with no problem, and we just don't think about it that way. And so when we're using kinesiology, we're working into that space as well. So we get to pull out information that isn't obvious because it's not a logical sequence necessarily. But, you know, we do have that as well. I mean, some of the allergy work, which is, you know, in a lot of ways is bread and butter in kinesiology. It's a lot of the stuff we do a lot of. I mean, one of my favorite past guy with a chocolate allergy. And he knew, I mean, heaven forbid.
I should ever have a chocolate allergy.
That's like the worst witch's curse ever, that one, isn't it? A chocolate allergy. But it was so severe for him that he would be in hospital for 24 hours and it would take him out of work for about 3 days, even to the point where he discovered that black jelly babies have a cocoa-based colouring in. So, you know, he was really, really sensitive. And we did his allergy procedures for him, and they were pretty straightforward. There was nothing kind of mystical about it. And he said, look, I'm not going to test this because if we're not right, then I'm going to hospital and I don't want that. And I said, no, that's fine. But at least we, as far as your body's concerned, we've done the work, so that shouldn't be a problem. And even if you do accidentally encounter anything, if you have a reaction, it should be significantly less severe and less of a problem. And he said, yeah, sure, okay, no problem. Thanks a lot. So a couple of weeks later, I get a phone call. And he says to me, he said, a couple of days ago, I came home and my wife had left out like a pastry on the counter, and I didn't think about it. I just picked it up and ate it, and when I bit into it and pulled it away, it was full of chocolate, and I was already kind of chewing, and I thought, well, it's nice. So he swallowed it, and he said, and then I was all right. So what I did was I waited a couple of days, and then I went out and bought a chocolate cake, and I ate the whole thing. And I was fine. And he said, chocolate's lovely.
Extreme. Yeah.
So, you know, and neither of us had any idea that that was going to be the benefit. But, you know, the body is just a programming system. You know, we've got to think about it a little bit like a tape recorder. Sorry for sharing my age there.
Yeah. They're back in, apparently.
Sure. Yeah, they are a bit. I saw somebody was selling Christmas tapes. So it's a programmable system, and it can be rewritten and rewritten and rewritten. And we're catching up on the fact that we know that DNA is like a data storage system, and we know that we can stick data into it.
Yes.
So, you know, science is now catching up to what in kinesiology and in other practices we've had this sense of, and our language might not have been the best for it, but we knew that we could do something that would change the way the body responded. And, you know, we've now taken that to incredible lengths.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to do so, that's for sure.
Yeah, cool. So you are kinesiology trained.
Yes.
You're doing amazing things with amazing people who are wanting to change as well. They have a desire for something different. What else are you doing?
I mean, one of the things about kinesiology is that it started to teach me about the different aspects of the body. Now, most of us would like to think we've got a fairly good handle on how many parts to the body and mind there are, and so did I.
And that we'd like to think we have some control over that as well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But the more I learnt, the more I realised there were aspects of the work that I needed other ways of looking at. So I trained in kind of Bowen technique. I looked at nutritional work. I trained in crystal therapy. I did aspects of colour therapy and vibrational essences. And I mean, there's a film called Garden State with Zach Braff in it. And one of my favourite scenes in that movie is when he's gone into the office of a neurologist because he's having these headaches, and he's just sat waiting, and he's looking at the wall, and the camera looks at what he's looking at, and it's like this row of certificates on the wall, and it starts to pan up. And as it pans up and wider, there are more and more framed certificates, and they fill the wall, and then there's just one on the ceiling. And, you know, there's a part of me that feels a little bit like that. I don't bother displaying my qualifications at my centre, because there's not room.
Yeah.
You know, there's just been so many levels and so many interesting pieces. And, you know, I really wanted to kind of share the gift of kinesiology as well. So I went back and I trained to be a teacher. And for a number of years, I taught kinesiology as well. And it's such a great thing. And for me, you know, going back to some of the stuff we were talking about last week, that I like to see change and development in people. It's, you know, there's nothing nicer for me than seeing somebody who is in one state that they're not happy with and changing something, and it takes them to another place. And so I wanted to magnify that. And so part of teaching kinesiology was, I thought, okay, there's a limit to how many people I can work on in a week.
Yeah.
You know, there's only so much energy muscle I've got. but if I could train 100 people, then that's 100 times more work. You know, so I kind of, I've always wanted to be on an educational side of things, because I want to spread the good word, basically.
You're teacher trained. Let's go back to that.
I'm teacher trained. Yeah, sure. So it made sense to find a better avenue for that. And, you know, I got to the point where I was the joint deputy head of UK training for Health Kinesiology UK at the time. And as with every organisation, when you get off the ground level, the politics starts to change. And so eventually it was just not a suitable place to remain anymore. And I was starting to bring the Bowen technique more in and incorporate the whole mind-body level of stuff. And it also came at a time that I was suddenly becoming aware of, and it's always an interesting one, suddenly becoming aware of the shadow and the shadow self. And the thing about the shadow self is that it's unconscious. So you don't know about it,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's kind of like, if it was shadow, how would I know? You wouldn't. So I suddenly got to a point where I started to see a lot of shadow and a whole side of psychology and mind and behavior that I'd not come across before. And it prompted a massive change for me. In some ways, it almost ended me working, because I needed to, A, deal with shadow projection that was aimed against me, and B, deal with my shadow in response to that. And it was a hectic time. And I'm so grateful to my brother Simon Calder, who he and I now work on the Qigong projects that we do together. I'm so grateful for him to introducing me to Ken Wilber and to Integral Theory and to the shadow self and to Big Mind Meditation, which is a Zen technique for non-dual meditation, which is out of this world, literally out of this world, in this world, all at the same time.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's all one,
you know. And it's taken me into more depth and into more places than I could have possibly imagined, you know, kind of 14 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's such a transformational practice. And I think one of the things that I've really noted all along the way is that a lot of people who are in complementary therapy and potentially in medicine or nursing as well, they get into it, or initially they have issues for themselves.
Mm.
They get help with those, they feel better, and they have a passion for wanting to help other people too.
Yeah.
And so they start training in that.
Yeah.
So they start training in whatever it is that they're passionate about. But what happens is they stop working on themselves. And they go through this phase where they think, because they're working with people that have got similar problems or problems that they relate to, that that's enough. And, you know, if you're a therapist and you're out there listening, it isn't.
Okay.
Ever. You once you start on this road of making change and development to yourself, there is no place to stop.
Yeah.
Because you are just going to continue to learn and open up deeper layers, deeper layers, deeper layers. And until you, you know, until you've really been into a non-dual space, you really don't have any idea of how many layers you potentially hold. There's a lot. And so to be able to have practices that help you do that and keep me then on track looking after myself. And, you know, I'll be the first to hold hands up and go, I am still finding parts of myself that when I look at them, I go, that's not so good, is it?
Do you ever think, what, there's more? You know, yeah, where is this stuff coming from?
But
how long
have
I got to live to keep going through this stuff?
Sure.
You know, it's just like it doesn't surprise me anymore because it is that, oh, okay, there's something else. And then it's like, right, how much more?
Sure.
What else could I do?
And I think I've got to the point now where I'm not surprised. It doesn't mean that sometimes it's not difficult.
But it's
to
not
face
blasé
those.
Either, is it?
No. Sure.
It's that you've now got such a range of tools that if you can't fix it or sort it or get to the bottom of it, you're going to know someone who's going to be able to assist.
Yeah. And also I know as soon as something has become present in my awareness, as soon as I can see that there's a problem with me, then I know that the best thing to do is to get on and start doing something, even if it's a little something towards resolving it. And then, you know, because if I'm not aware of it, I can't change it.
Yeah.
But as soon as I'm aware of it, I can no longer deny it anymore. So I start doing stuff to change it. And, you know, I'm a stubborn character.
No.
You know, I resist, you know. And even this year, I had earlier on in the year, I had a great breakthrough in my own meditation practice where a certain level of my resistance, I just gave up. I just managed to drop it. And it's ever since then, it's just been like, oh, that's so much better, you know. But it's taken me 25 years of meditation practice to get to that point.
Yeah.
You know, that's how stubborn I am. Yeah. You know, a lot of people, 5-10 years, that's fine. But no, 25 years, let's do this properly. Let's hang on, fight, resist, fight my own mind until, you know, I've got no choice. So, and that's often what happens for a lot of people with their health is their body goes, I'm sorry, you now have no choice. I need to disable you in some way so that you will stop and look at how the cost of your behavior and your choices and your thought patterns is affecting not only your health, but the health of your relationships, the health of your environment. And again, I think a lot of people don't really, you know, they might recognize how some of their behavior affects them. They might recognize how some of it affects their relationship. But how many people are thinking about how their cheap, you know, kind of Walmart-based food products are actually having a detrimental effect on rainforests or on fish stocks or on pollution levels? And this is one of the things we're really being called for at the moment, not just personal responsibility, not just cultural responsibility, but world responsibility as well. So, you know, let's think about it this weekend as you're doing your Christmas shopping.
Yeah,
be
or
nice.
Whatever you are doing.
Yeah, whatever you're doing. You know, think about how every one of your actions has an implication. You know, when you buy the new iPhone, we know that we're continuing to propagate poor workers' rights in Asian countries. You know, so, and again, you know, okay, I'm sat here with a mobile device myself, but again, I try and make my choices as best as I can. And at least having an awareness of that, I know the impact of that on my own health and well-being too.
Cool. And I believe, is it this weekend you've got Qigong happening?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, if you're hanging on to fear and anxiety.
If you don't want to do your Christmas shopping.
Sure.
Well.
Yeah, so Sunday, 10 o'clock, Centre for Integral Health in Shrewsbury. You can come for the first hour and just, you know, get your body going. You can come for the morning and start really building your energy up. Or you can stay for the whole day and deal with a lot of the seasonal energy in the water element in our kidneys, fear and anxiety, exhaustion, and really kind of shift how you're feeling through that. And you'll feel so much more robust. It's a donation only day as well. So
cool.
You just pay what you feel, but there's only two places left. So if you want to go, get in contact with us, integralhealthshrewsbury.com or bankholder.co.uk and get in contact with me.
So you're back next week.
I am.
The last show for Empowerment Hour of 2016. And we'll talk more about your Bowen technique and the centre itself, I think.
We will. Integral theory.
Great.
Let's introduce Ken Wilber to the world.
That would be really cool. Ben, thanks so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Denise.
Bye for now.